And you're back here on EAA Radio, 1210 AM, 93.1 FM, and around the globe at www.airventure.org. This is Magneto Mel here with Push to Talk on Saturday morning at AirVenture, and I'm talking with Darren Gaines and Lutz Brichoff, who are representing NATCA and the German, I guess, trade union, the Trade Union Air Navigation Services. So we are talking about modernization and the more over in a global system. And one of the things that you had started to say, Lutz, you touched on it before we went to break. I was also curious, you've got the modernization on the ATC side, but that's going to come with a certain amount of upgrade of equipment on the pilot side and the aircraft and with the airlines and how and with pilot training to be using the new ICAO standards. So is there any sort of integrated effort to modernize the whole system, to your knowledge, in terms of how that works with airlines, what equipment they would need?
Well, one of the things that's actually up and running right now for us is Mode S transponders. That was the big issue a couple of years back. In fact, they started the big push, I think, in 2003. The airlines had to upgrade their transponders. I think a lot of people aren't aware of the fact, and I'm sure it's a similar situation in the States, that with a limited pool of transponder codes, that we basically just run out of codes. And in Europe, because everything is so tight, and I'm basically, with my radar scope, watching literally four different countries, we have to be very careful about how we allocate codes to not get this double coding system, because if you have aircraft in the same, not necessarily the same airspace, but flying in the same airspace that's watched by a specific radar using the same code, that causes a lot of problems. So there was a big drive to get everybody equipped with Mode S, and Mode S is basically like an IP address. So we now have not unlimited, but we have so many codes that we are assuming before the codes run out, the oil will run out. So we had the airlines retrofit that. We've had general aviation retrofit that. The plus side has been that we can now allocate codes ad absurdum. On the negative side, the radar system isn't coping with Mode S yet. It's still in a trial modus. We keep doing tests. It's kind of up and running, but it hasn't officially kicked in yet. For general aviation, it's been a big expense. So there was a lot of resistance to getting Mode S, and a lot of the general aviation pilots weren't really happy about the whole thing. And it's just a simple thing like sitting. I was flying recently, and I hadn't flown for a while, and they'd equipped one of the aircrafts in the club that I fly at with a Mode S transponder. And I got airborne, and I hadn't realized that. And suddenly the guy said, gave me a code, and I realized, oops, this is Mode S transponder. And then I actually had to sit and think about how to start it up and switch it on and get the number set up. And it wasn't as simple. So it's little things like that that we have to take into account. I would say that was probably from an equipment point of view. And, of course, for the airlines, the other big thing is the data link. Yes, correct. Lufthansa is actually doing a trial run with that. I have a friend of mine who flies long range at Lufthansa, and I believe they're doing it at Santa Maria, which is on the Azores, when they do the flights over the South Atlantic, that Lufthansa is working together with Portugal ATC to try and get that set up, and it seems to be working very successfully for them. I'm quite surprised to hear that. I know that in Miami there was a trial run. It didn't work out that well. I'm not sure how it would work in Europe at the moment. There's certainly been talk about getting it up and running, but for the Atlantic Ocean or the oceanic stretches, it seems to be doing a good job. And I've spoken to some of the controllers who work in the Azores, and they've been very happy with it, because a lot of the problems that you have that we were talking about the other day about language and English and all of that goes away. You're using data link. You punch in what you're doing. You punch in the numbers. It's standardized. You've got time to read it. There's very little chance for confusion. So I think that's something that's probably going to be in the future of air traffic, is going to be, there's going to be some kind of a data link for certain standard situations. I don't think we're ever going to get the controller out of the loop, but I think that we can probably cut down on the talk and basically just get safety improved by using certain data links, not necessarily everywhere, but certainly in the upper airspaces where there's a lot of en route traffic. I think there's a possibility to with data link to improve things.
And what about the perspective from the U.S. there on that?
Quick comment on Datalink. Lutz mentioned the Miami project, and yeah, under Administrator Blakey, that was pretty much shelved. The funding for that was discontinued, and the program was set aside indefinitely. Don't know if it's going to be come back online or not. And so I can't speak for the controllers down there. It does offer advantages. One of the disadvantages that I see, which is probably more critical in the terminal environment than in the en route, is the loss of the party line concept and the loss of situational awareness. Pilots not only are required to maintain awareness of their position, but it also helps if they can follow along on the radio frequency, the party line concept, to find out what other aircraft are doing around them, what aircraft are cleared to land or cleared for takeoff or are on converging courses on the same approach as they are. So hearing what other aircraft are doing on the frequency, I think it does benefit many pilots, and you would lose that potentially with the controller pilot data link concept. But we are up against the at many places the maximum capacity for frequency congestion. The frequencies are just so overloaded that unless we get more frequencies, something's going to have to be done. And this is one way to address the frequency congestion problem as well. So it has advantages and disadvantages from my perspective.
Well, aside from just the CPDLC, the other equipment and the upgrades that would need to happen to the aircraft that are flying the system, not just ATC centers,
sure.
But what sort of efforts need to come on board for that?
A great project was the Capstone project in Alaska. And what happened there was several hundred aircraft, maybe even in thousands, I'm not sure the numbers, that were the government paid for, the state and the federal government paid for aircraft to be equipped with ADS-B technology. And this technology gave them real-time traffic picture in the cockpit, real-time weather picture in the cockpit. And this was a test run for the FAA to see how this technology would work. And the government paid for these aircraft to be equipped like that. And, you know, you come up to the airmen in Alaska, they say, hey, would you like this equipment installed in your aircraft for free? Of course, they're going to accept it because Alaska has traditionally had a very, very high accident rate due to, you know, certain concerns that are unique to that part of the country. But under the Capstone project, we learned a lot about ADS-B and about the technology that's going to take and about the ATC issues involved. And I can get into those further if you'd like. But basically, where I'm going with this is we did want to learn a lot, and it was very beneficial to us. So if the users had a way to get some sort of rebate or some sort of assistance in upgrading, I think they would be all for it. But if you mandate that everybody out there, I can't speak for the organizations, but I'm a pilot myself, but if you mandate that everybody's going to have to now equip their aircraft with a certain minimum amount of equipment just to play in the National Airspace System, that's not where we want to go, because we really enjoy our freedoms here in this country of being able to get up in the airplane, fly around with some restrictions, not over the busy airports, and just fly without talking to anybody in airspace. We're not going to hurt anybody, and we really enjoy that freedom. We need to preserve that from, I'm talking now as a pilot, somebody that likes to get off work and go fly my airplane. So I think there's a balance that needs to be made. We need to advance in technology. We need to embrace the fact that, hey, we're moving along in technology. We need to move ahead and come on board with the new technology that's offered, but at the same time, preserve our heritage and preserve the grassroots nature of where we came from in aviation. And I think we need to strike that balance someplace.
That's a good point. I'm going to go ahead and give out the number. We are going to take calls. If anybody's out there, either on the field with a telephone or you haven't made it to the air show and you want to ask these guys a question yourself, you can call in on 920-230-7984, 920-230-7984, and feel free to pose a question to our air traffic control guys here, and it's a great chance to talk to them when you're not flying in the airplane and just getting a clearance. So feel free to call in. We're going to take a quick break here on EAA Radio, 1210 AM, 93.1 FM, and on the web at www.airventure.org/radio.